Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at all? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. It is Wednesday. It is the 2nd of March in the year 2005. And we've had, I would say, a good 12 inches of a beautiful light snow during this. We kind of got the end, I think, the tail end of the nor'easter. But it snowed for a great part of the day today. Wind was blowing like crazy, gusting. And there are there are snow drifts all over the yard, everywhere you look. And it looks almost like a white desert out there. It's absolutely gorgeous. And I'm enjoying this for the last, probably, snow of the season. And my friend Donnie came, the gentleman who bought the property across the road. He came yesterday and plowed out the driveway and plowed a path around the house and out to the chicken yard and out to the burn barrel. And today... there's no sign of any paths that were plowed yesterday. So that's my weather report for tonight. Thanks for joining us here on Sweet Liberty tonight. We'll begin with our spiritual message. And this is from the little book, The Journey with the Master, by Eva Bell Werber. And this is... The segment titled Your Map. This morning, as we start forth on your journey, and this is these are writings as though it is spirit speaking directly to us folks. This morning, as we start forth on your journey, it's very necessary that for a time you lay aside all body concepts. Think not of food, nor yet of raiment. Think neither of health nor illness, either for yourself or for others. All of these things are not of soul or spirit, and it is as such that we travel upon this path, which will lie before your feet. Can you not see that as we put aside these other things, these outer garments, which you, soul, have taken on with the physical body, they will fall into their rightful relationship to you? They will be able to hinder you not as you journey on. And when you again need them for your use and daily life, they will be purified, made whole, and of benefit to you. I must emphasize the fact that you do have need of these outer things of the sense world, for that is the present plan of your functioning. Therefore, keep your body as a fitting instrument for your use. Never forget that I, the Master of Galilee, walked and talked with my Father on the mountain peak of consciousness, yet I also descended again onto the plane of mortal thinking and living. It is these mountaintop experiences which will enable you to go among those whom you meet as you go along the daily walks of life, giving forth to them a living substance, helping those who are ready to start on the same journey which you are taking. Beloved, take each lesson which I give to you as a little part of the journey we are taking together, keeping our eyes ever on our goal, which is the height of consciousness, which will be attained as we go forward hand in hand together. With each step forward will come many little attainments of growth. You will have a sense of lightness, pure freedom and joy as with me you travel on and upward. I do not always promise a smooth pathway, for many times the senses will rebel, and days may often pass in which there seems to have been no progress. In fact, you may at times seem to descend again into the valley of negative things and pure sense consciousness. But always know that we are together, that no circumstance can separate you from me, for I am pure spirit, dwelling in the soul, which is you. The mountaintop lies ahead in all its beauty for your attainment. Shall we not set forth, my child? Take each simple lesson on the following pages as a map for you to follow. Some are short, some long, but they will, if obeyed, make clear your consciousness of the divine comrade who goes with you each step of the way. I don't know about you, when I read this, it gives me great comfort. It's like the poem Footsteps, where the person was praying and said, Jesus, you said that when I was troubled that you would always be with me, and yet in the worst times of my life, when I see the footprints, I see only one set of footprints. And why is it that you're not with me at that time? And in the poem, Jesus says, my child, those were the times I was carrying you, when you see only one set of footprints. Footprints in the sand. I have a blanket, a beautiful blanket with that actually woven right into the blanket itself, and I love it. Before I get started here, I do want to finish what I started last night, folks, reading to you from the book titled One by Richard Bach. There were some, to me, for me, very meaningful, and I read the book, as I said. I probably read it shortly after it was published in 88, and I decided to read it again, and I'm so glad I did. But some of the, as I was reading them, I thought about you, because it's stuff that we've talked about, only it's in a different, it's put in a different way. But I want to tell you something weird that's been happening here. It's been a couple of months ago, I think. I the first one I got, I don't remember. Time is just, it's impossible for me to keep a track of it. But I got a credit card offer to this address, and it was sent to F. D. Roosevelt, Suite Liberty, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, Pennsylvania. Now, I have a regular mailing address, too, and I do have credit card, and the credit card is always billed to the regular address. But this comes to P.O. Box, F. D. Roosevelt. So I open it up. It's from Capital One. I think it's a fairly major credit card. And it said, Dear F.D. Roosevelt, and then it went on to say that there's this business account that they will give me a card for my business, et cetera, et cetera. I thought it was funny. I thought it was hilarious. And I thought, well, somebody's playing a joke. Then I get one from Bank One to F.D. Roosevelt. And then I got one from another credit card. I don't recall the name, but it was also to F.D. Roosevelt, Suite Liberty, at my P.O. box. Well, now, this week, I get this thing. It's a special invitation enclosed. It says it's from Bentonville, Arkansas. I didn't open it. It isn't a credit card. My sis said she didn't think I should open it. But this is, listen to this. This is addressed to Lewis McFadden, Suite Liberty or current resident, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, Pennsylvania. And it's a special invitation to something that's going on. Isn't Bentonville, Arkansas, where Walmart is? Well, Lewis McFadden, when Donnie came over to plow the other day, actually it was yesterday. Well, he brought the mail in when he came in, and I got this, and I looked at it, and I said, oh, my God, look at this. And I showed it to him, but he didn't know who Lewis McFadden is. And I said, Lewis McFadden was a congressman from Pennsylvania who was exposing the scam of the Federal Reserve System. And in fact, there's a book of all his speeches that he made in Congress. And I said, and they poisoned the guy. They killed him. And then I looked at it. I said, whoa, I wonder if this is a veiled threat or something. Lewis McFadden, Sweet Liberty, or current resident, P.O. Box 190. I just want you guys to know that. Just wanted it out there, okay? And doesn't that sound quite strange to you? A credit card company? Bank One? Sending mail to F.D. Roosevelt? And it didn't say we received your application, like somebody filled out an application form as a joke. Anyway, I wanted you to know that. So I'm going back to the excerpt where I was in the book last night, but I want to read again. They found themselves in this very beautiful spot, and there was this old man in a brown robe, and they saw these sparks and fire flying, and they thought he was welding, and then they realized that he was praying, and just real close to him was this beautiful light, and then they heard from the light say, and to the world shall you give as you have received. Give to all who yearn to know the truth, from whence we came, the reason for our being, and the course that lies ahead on the way to our forever home. We stopped a few yards behind him, says Richard Bach writing, transfixed by the sight. I had seen that brilliance once before in my life years ago, had been stunned by one accidental glimpse of what to this day I still call love. The light we saw this moment was the same, so radiant it rendered the world a footnote, a dim asterisk. Then next instant, the light was gone. Beneath the place where it had been lay a sheaf of golden paper, a scripture in grand calligraphy. The man knelt silent, eyes closed, unaware of our presence. Leslie walked forward, reached for the glowing manuscript, picked it up. In this mystical place, her hand did not pass through the parchment. Expecting runes or hieroglyphics, we found words in English. Of course, I thought, the old man would read them as French, a Persian as Farsi, so it must be with revelation. It's not the language that matters, but the communication of ideas. And she began reading, "You are creatures of light," we read. "From light have you come, to light shall you go. And surrounding you through every step is the light of your infinite being." She turned a page. "By your choice dwell you now in the world which you have created. What you hold in your heart shall be true, and what most you admire, that shall you become. Fear not, nor be dismayed at the appearance that is darkness, at the disguise that is evil, at the empty cloak that is death. For you have picked these for your challenges. They are the stones on which you choose to whet the keen edge of your spirit. Know that ever about you stands the reality of love. And each moment, you have the power to transform your world by what you have learned." The pages went on, hundreds of them. We leafed through, struck in awe. "You are life, inventing form. No more can you die on sword or years than you can die on doorways through which you walk, one room into another. Every room gives its word for you to speak, every passage its song for you to sing." Leslie looked at me, her eyes luminous. If this writing could touch us so, I thought, we from the 20th century, what effect would it have on people from the, whatever this was, the 12th? We turn back to the manuscript. No words of ritual, no directions for worship, no calling down fire and destruction on enemies, no disasters for unbelievers, no cruel Attila gods. It didn't mention temples or priests or rabbis or congregations or choirs or costumes or holy days. It was scripture written for the loving inner being and for that being only. Turn these ideas loose in this century, I thought, a key to recognize our power over belief. Unleash the power of love, and terror will vanish. With this, the world can sidestep the dark ages. The old man opened his eyes, saw us at last, and stood as unafraid as if he'd read the scriptures through. He glanced at me, looked a long moment at Leslie. "I am Jean-Paul Leclerc," he said, "and you are angels." Before we recovered from our puzzlement, the man laughed joyfully. "Did you notice," he said, "the light?" "Inspiration," said my wife, handing him the golden pages. "Inspiration indeed." He bowed as though he remembered her, and she at least were an angel. And he said, "These words are key to the truth for any who will read. They are life to those who will listen. When I was a child, the light promised that the pages would come to my hand on the night that you should appear. Now that I am old, you have come, and they too." "They will change the world," I said. He looked at me strangely. "No. But they were given to you in test," he said. "Test? I have traveled far," he said. "I've studied scriptures of 100 faiths, from Cathay to the Norselands." His eyes twinkled. "And in spite of my study, I have learned. Every grand religion begins in light, yet only hearts hold light. Pages cannot." "But you have in your hands," I said, "you must read it. It's beautiful." "I have paper in my hand," said the elder. "Give these words to the world. Listen to this, folks. I know this is a novel written out of the imagination of Richard Bach, but it's a good glimpse at how religions are made and how the wars and the killing happens because of religions." The old man said, "I have paper in my hands. Give these to the world and they will be loved and understood by those who already know their truth. But before we give them, we must name them, and that will be their death." "To name a beautiful thing is to kill it?" He looked at me surprised. "To name a thing is harmless. To name these ideas is to create a religion." "Why?" He smiled, handing me the manuscript. "I give these pages to you, Richard," I told him. "I give these pages directly from the light of love to you, Richard. Do you want to give them in turn to the world? To people yearning to know what they say? To ones who have not been privileged to stand at this place in the moment that the gift was given? Or do you want to keep this writing for yourself alone?" "I want to give them, of course." "And what will you call your gift?" What is he getting at, I wondered. "Does it matter? If you did not name it, others will. They will call it the Book of Richard." "I see. All right, I'll call it anything. I'll call it the pages." "And will you safeguard the pages?" And now he's capitalizing the pages. Or will you allow others to edit them, to change what they don't understand, to strike out what they please, whatever it is not to their liking?" "No, no changes. They were delivered from the light. No changes." "Are you sure? Not a line here, a line there for good reason. Most people won't understand. This might offend. The message isn't clear." "No changes." He raised his eyebrows, questioning. "Who are you to insist? I was here when they were given. I saw them appear myself." "So," he said, "you have become the keeper of the pages, that's capitalized. Doesn't have to be me, it can be anyone, as long as they promise no changes. But someone is keeper of the pages. Someone, I suppose. And here begins the Pageite priesthood. Those who give their lives to protect an order of thinking become the priests of that order. Yet any new order, any new way is change. And change is the end of the world as it is. These pages are no threat, I said. They're love and freedom. And love and freedom are the end of fear and slavery. Of course, I said, vexed. What was he getting at? Why was Leslie standing silent? Didn't she agree that this was... Those who profit from fear and slavery, said Leclerc, will they be happy with the message of the pages? Probably not, but we can't let this light be lost. Will you promise to protect the light? Of course. The other Pageites, your friends, they'll protect it too? Yes. And if the profiteers in fear and slavery convince the king of the land that you are dangerous, if they march on your house, if they come with swords, how are you going to protect the pages? I'll take them away. I'll escape. And when you're followed and caught and cornered? If I have to fight, I'll fight, I said. There are principles more important than life. Some ideas are worth dying for. The old man sighed. And so began the Pageite Wars, he said. Armor and swords and shields and banners, horses and fire, blood in the streets. They will not be small wars. Thousands of true believers will join you, tens of thousands, swift and strong and smart. But the principles of the pages challenge the rulers of every nation that keeps its power through fear and darkness. Tens of thousands will ride against you. At last, it began to dawn what Leclerc was trying to tell me. To be known, he went on, to be distinguished from others, you will need a symbol. What symbol will you choose? What sign will you strike upon your banners? My heart sank under the weight of his words, but I struggled on. The symbol of light, I said, the sign of the flame. And so it shall be, he said, reading history unwritten, that the sign of the flame shall meet the sign of the cross on the battlefields of France. And the flame shall prevail, a glorious victory, and the first cities of the cross shall be leveled by your pure fire. But the cross shall join with the crescent, and together their armies shall swarm in from south and the east and down from the north, 100,000 armed men to your 80,000. Oh, stop, I wanted to say, I know what comes next. As for every soldier of the cross and warrior of the crescent whom you kill protecting your gift, 100 will hate your name. Their fathers and mothers, their wives and daughters and sons and friends will hate the Pageites and the cursed pages for the murder of their loved ones. And every Pageite will despise every Christian and cursed cross and every Muslim and cursed crescent for the murder of their own. No, I cried. Every word he said was true. And during the wars, altars will spring up, cathedrals and spires will rise to enshrine the pages. Those reaching for growth and understanding will find themselves burdened instead with new superstitions and new limits, bells and symbols, rules and chants, ceremonies and prayers, investments, incense, and offerings of gold. The heart of Pageism will turn from love to gold. Gold to build greater temples. Gold to buy swords, to convert the non-believers, and to save their souls. And when you die, first keeper of the pages, gold to build images of you. There will be towering statues, grand frescoes, paintings to commit this scene to immortal art. See woven in this tapestry there the light, there the pages, there the vault of the sky opened to paradise. Here kneels Richard the Great in gleaming armor. Here the lovely angel of wisdom, the hallowed pages in her hand. Here old Leclerc, at his humble campfire in the mountains, witness to the vision. No, I thought, it's impossible. But it wasn't impossible. It was inevitable. Give those pages to the world, and there shall be another mighty religion, another priesthood, another us, and another them, one set against the other. In 100 years, 1,000,000 will have died for the words that we hold in our hands. In 1,000 years, tens of millions. All this for paper. There was no trace of bitterness in his voice, and nor did it grow cynical or weary. Jean-Paul Leclerc was filled with a lifetime's learning, calm acceptance of what he had found. Leslie shivered. Do you want my jacket? No, thank you. It's not that the cold. Not the cold, said Leclerc. He stooped and picked a brand from his fire, raised it to touch the golden pages. This will warm you. No, I jerked the sheaf away. Burn the truth? The truth doesn't burn. The truth waits for anyone who wishes to find it, he said. The truth doesn't burn. The truth waits for anyone who wishes to find it. Only these pages will burn. It's your choice. Would you like pageism to become the next religion in this world? He smiled. You will be saints of the church. I looked to Leslie. I saw the horror in her eyes that I felt in my own. She took the brand from him, touched it to the corners of the parchment. The blaze grew to a wide, sun-white blossom under our fingers, and in a moment, we let the bright shards fall to the ground. They burned a moment longer and went dark. The old man sighed his relief. What a blessed evening. How rarely are we given the chance to save the world from a new religion. And then he faced my wife, smiling hopefully. We did save it? She smiled back at him. We did. There's not a word in our history, Jean-Paul Leclerc, of the Pageites or their wars. They looked a tender goodbye to each other, skeptic to loving skeptic, and then with a small bow to both of us, the old man turned and walked up the mountain into the dark. The fiery pages still burned in my mind. Inspiration turned to ash. But the ones who need what those pages had to say, I said to Leslie, how can we learn what was written there? He's right, she said, looking after the man until she could see him no more. Whoever wants truth and light can find it for themselves. Whoever wants truth and light can find it for themselves. I'm not sure. Sometimes we need a teacher. She turned to me. Try this, she said. Pretend that you honestly, truly, deeply want to know who you are, where you came from, why you're here. Pretend you're willing never to rest or till you know. I nodded and imagined myself nonstop, determined, resolute, eager to learn, combing libraries for books and back issues, haunting lectures and seminars, keeping diaries of my hopes and speculation, writing intuitions, meditating on mountaintops, following leads from drums and coincidence, asking strangers. Now, she said, can you imagine yourself not finding it? Whew, I thought, how this woman can make me see. I bowed in answer. My Lady Leclerc, Princess of Knowing. And she said, my Lord Richard, Princess of Flame. And we'll be right back, folks. I hope you have your pen in your hand to get my address. And thank you for being here tonight. I'll be right back. Don't go away.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Okay, let me give you that address once again, folks, in case you didn't get it. It is Jackie Petrou, not Lewis McFadden. Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, Pennsylvania, 16936. P.O. Box 190, Millerton, Pennsylvania, 16936. And for those of you who aren't, for those of you who are sponsoring this broadcast, thank you. And you do know who you are. I know you do. And I ask your forgiveness for my lack of correspondence. Every envelope that I open, I see that you took the time to write the address. You wrote the address down in the first place, and you went and you got a money order, or you brought your checkbook out, or you took cash out and wrapped it in foil, got the envelope, addressed it, put the stamp on it. That is an intentional act, and it is an act for me, it is an act of love. Because you're supporting a broadcast, information that evidently is meaningful to you. And I believe that, or you wouldn't be doing it. For those of you who are not, first of all, let me finish. Those of you who write and send your donations and send information, I want you to know that no envelope that I open that I take for granted. And I silently thank you. And my envelopes are piling up. I put little notes, send letter, send letter, send letter. And it just hasn't been done. And I apologize for that. It isn't that I couldn't. It's very time consuming. And there's a lot of other things going on. So I want you to know that even though I haven't written a thank you, that I do thank you from the bottom of my heart. And for those of you who listen to the broadcast and appreciate it and would like to hear it continue, because it is only brought to you because our listeners have been sponsoring it for, we're at 7.5 years so far. That seems unbelievable, but it is true, because we started listener-sponsored broadcasting in June of 1998, folks. So June this year, will be 8 full years. That's amazing. In fact, I'll tell you what. Adam Lott told me that on 2 different occasions. With quite a bit of time in between, but when I sent off payment to him and called to make sure they got it, and he has said, George and I are just amazed at the sponsorship that you have on this broadcast. And I thought maybe they were amazed for other reasons or their own reasons, but because I know that we have touched on some very sensitive topics on this broadcast, folks, and I know that some people don't appreciate it. And I'm not sure that the people at WWCR do, but here we are, and we are here because of you. For those of you who would like to become engaged in this broadcast and become part of it, I'm inviting you now to do so. And please know that any amount, a dollar, two, five, ten, fifty, whatever you can afford and whatever your heart leads you to, all of it makes a difference, every single bit of it. So, there's another part here that I wanted to get to. This was one of their times when they found themselves in a restaurant. And they didn't know why they were there. And then they sat down, and there was a couple in a booth, both of them sitting quietly, etc. They began to hear the conversation, and they began to realize that it was another parallel or alternate lifetime. It was them in another lifetime and choices that the man, Richard, had made or not made. And he had been given 6 months to live, and he was moaning and groaning. I shouldn't say it that way, but he was very negative. She had evidently read Bridge Across Forever and asked him to read it, and he was sitting there saying, I could have done everything he did. I could have written everything that he wrote. And I could have written books. I could have flown airplanes, but he didn't do any of it. He didn't fly airplanes because it was too damned expensive, he said. And he quit writing because he got rejection slips. And she thought, well, maybe he had just stopped too soon. Anyway, she said she would like for him to make a list of everything that he wanted to do and never did. And on the first of the list was flying lessons. This is a man with 6 months to live. And they started talking, and suddenly he became alive and animated. And when she mentioned the flying lessons as an anniversary present, he looked at her as if she'd taken leave of her senses. You can still do it, Davy. I know you can. His name was Davy. But that's an aspect, another aspect of ourselves. They were quiet for a moment. Damn, he said, it's not fair. Nothing's fair, said his wife, but, you know, sometimes they stay 6 months, and then it just goes away. People live for years. Lorraine, it went so fast. Yesterday I joined the Army. That was 30 years ago. Why don't they tell you it goes so fast? They do, she said. He sighed. Why didn't we listen? Would it have made a difference? It would now, he said, if I had it to live over, knowing. What would you say to our children now if we'd had any, she asked. I'd tell them, think about everything. Do I really want to do this? Doesn't matter what you do. It matters if you want to do it. She looked at him surprised. He doesn't talk this way often, I thought. I'd tell him it's no fun when you come down to your last 6 months to wonder what happened to the best that you could have been. What happened to what matters? I'd tell him nobody means to get carried away in mediocrity, but it happens. It happens unless you think about everything you do, unless you make every choice the best one you know how to make. She said, you should have written, Davy. He waved his hand. No, it's like at the end, there's this surprise quiz. Am I proud of me? I gave my life to become the person I am right now. Was it worth what I paid? That's all I wanted to read to you of that one. And then the last one I'm going to do is this is about relationship, and that's what we all are, aren't we, folks, in relationship with each other every day, with our families, with our friends, with our loved ones. And I think this is good for any of us to read who are in a love relationship, a man-woman relationship. They found themselves In a hotel room, he was collapsed alone on the bed. My twin, my exact twin, propped up on one elbow, staring out the window. He wasn't me, but he was so close that I knew we couldn't be far from home. Glass doors framed a balcony overlooking a golf course, tall evergreens beyond, low clouds, the steady pelt of rain on the roof. It was either late afternoon, or the clouds were so thick and dark that noon had turned to dusk. Leslie and I stood on a matching balcony on the opposite side of the room looking in. "I get the feeling he's awfully depressed, don't you?" she whispered. I nodded. "Strange for him to lie there doing nothing. Where's Leslie?" She shook her head, watched him concerned. "I feel awkward in this situation," she said. "I think you should talk to him alone." The man lay unmoving, yet he wasn't asleep. "Go on, sweetheart," she urged. "I think he needs you." I squeezed her hand and moved into the room without her. He stared into the gray, barely tilted his head when I approached. Next to him on the bedspread was a laptop computer, power light glowing, but its screen as blank as his face. "Hi, Richard," I said. "Don't be startled. I'm..." "I know," he said. "You're the projection of a troubled mind." He turned his eyes back to the rain. I thought of a tree. Lightning blasted, toppled here, unable to move. "What happened?" I asked. No reply. "Why are you so depressed?" "It didn't work out," he said at last. "I don't know what happened." Another pause. "She left me." "Leslie left you?" A half nod from the form on the bed. "She said if I didn't get out of the house, she would. She couldn't stand me anymore. I may be the one who flew away, but she's the one who left the marriage." Impossible, I thought. What would it take for an alternate Leslie to say she couldn't stand him anymore? So many terrible times we had come through together, my Leslie and I. Years of struggle after my bankruptcy. Times we were so tired we could hardly go on. So pressured, we'd lost perspective and patience. Times we'd quarreled, but never was it serious. Never did we part. Never did anybody say, "If you don't leave, I will." What could have happened to them that was so much worse than what had happened to us? "She won't talk to me." His voice was as listless as his body. "As soon as I try to discuss things with her, she hangs up." "What did you do? Did you take up drinking, drugs? Did you..." "Don't be an idiot," he said irritably. "I'm me." He closed his eyes. "Get out of here. Leave me alone." "I'm sorry," I said. "That was dumb of me. It's just that I can't imagine what it would take to break you two up. It had to be something monumental." "No," he said, "little things. It was all little things. There's this mountain of work, taxes and accounting and films and books and 1,000 requests and offers from all over the world. It's got to be done and done right, according to her. So she goes at it like a crazy woman. She never stops. Years ago, she promised me my life would never again be the mess it was before she met me, and she meant it." He rambled on, glad to talk, even to his mind's projection. "I just don't care about trivia. I never did. So she takes it on herself to do it all, juggling 3 computers with one hand and 1,000 forms and requirements and deadlines with the other. She's going to keep that promise if it kills her. Do you understand?" He said that last as though he meant if it kills me. He was resentful, bitter. "She has no time for me, no time for anything but work, and I can't help her because she's scared to death I'll mess it up again. So I remind her this is a world of illusions. Don't take it so seriously. And I think I'll go fly the airplane for a while. Simple truth. But when I leave, she glares at me like she'd like to vaporize me." He lay on the bed as though it were an analyst couch. "She's changed. The stress has changed her. She isn't charming or funny or beautiful anymore. It's like she's driving a bulldozer on a landfill, and there's so much paper has to be moved by April 15th and December 30th or September 26th that she's going to be buried in it if she doesn't keep moving. And I say, what's happened to our lives? And she yells, well, if you carried some of the load around here, you might find out. If I didn't know it was me, I would have said the man was raving. Yet I had nearly taken his road once, nearly gone as crazy as he sounded. It's so easy to get lost in a typhoon of detail, to put off the most important things in life because you're sure nothing can threaten a love that special, and then discover one day that living itself has turned into a detail, and in the process you've become a stranger to the one you love most. I've been where you are, I said, bending the truth. Would it be all right if I asked you one question? Go ahead. Ask. Nothing can hurt. It's the end of us. It wasn't my fault. Little things can be deadly, sure, but this is us, soulmates. Can you imagine? I fall back into my old ways, a little less than neat for a few days, and she complains I'm making work for her when she's already drowning. She makes a list of little things she wants me to do. And I don't get to them for a while. I forget something as silly as changing light bulb, and she accuses me of making her carry all the responsibility. You see what I mean? Sure, I should help out, but all the time? And even if I don't, is that enough to break up our marriage? Shouldn't be, but pebble after pebble, it piles up, and suddenly the whole bridge collapses. I told her to snap out of it. Look at the bright side. But no, our marriage used to be love and respect. Now it's strain and endless work and anger. She just can't see what's most important. She... Say, guy, tell me something, I said. He stopped complaining, looked at me surprised that I was still there. Why should she think you're worth it, I asked. What's so great about you that she ought to be in love with you? He frowned, opened his mouth, but no words came. I might as well have been a wizard, stole his power of speech. And then he looked away, puzzled, into the rain. What was the question again, he asked, after a while. What is there about you, I said patiently, that your wife ought to love? He thought again, shrugged, and gave up. I don't know. Are you loving to her? He shook his head ever so slightly. Not anymore, but it's difficult when... Are you understanding, supportive? Honestly? Not really. Are you open, sensitive to her feelings? Are you caring, compassionate? Can't say that I am. He looked grim. No. He considered every question I asked. I wondered if it took courage to answer, or if despair was forcing him to face the truth. Are you... Hello? Are you communicative, Cuff? A good conversationalist? Entertaining? Interesting? Enlightening? Enthusiastic? Inspiring? He sat up for the first time and looked at me. Sometimes. Well, hardly ever. A long pause. No. Are you romantic? Are you thoughtful? Do you do sweet little things for her? No. Are you a good cook? Are you orderly around the house? No. Are you reliable, a problem solver? Are you a haven from stress for her? Not really. An astute businessman? No. Are you her friend? He thought longest about that. No, I'm not, he said at last. If you showed up with all these faults on your first date with her, do you think she'd have wanted a second? No. Then why hasn't she left you before this, I asked. Why has she stayed? He looked up in pain. Because she's married to me? Probably so. We were both quiet thinking about that. Do you think it's possible for you to change, I asked, to turn these no's to yeses? He looked at me, haggard from his answers. Of course it's possible. I used to be the best friend she had. I used to be... He paused, trying to remember what he used to be. Would these things, would these qualities hurt you if you had them back, I asked. Would practicing them diminish you somehow? No. Or what have you got to lose by giving them a try? Nothing, I guess. Do you think there'd be anything for you to gain? I'd have a lot to gain, he said finally, as though the idea were brand new to him. I think she might love me again. And if she did, we'd both be happy. He thought back. Every moment together used to be glorious. It was romantic. And we'd explore ideas, find new insights. It was always exciting. If we had time, we'd be like that again. He paused and then spoke his truest truth. I really could help her more than I do. It's just that I've gotten so used to her doing everything. It's been easier to let her do it. But if I helped, if I did my part, I think I'd get my self-respect back. He got up, looked in the mirror, shook his head, and began pacing about the room. The transformation was remarkable. Does he really understand just like that, I wondered. Why couldn't I have figured this out for myself, he asked. And he glanced at me. Well, in fact, I guess I did. It took years to slip down to where you are, I said, a voice of caution. How many years to climb back up? Question startled him. None, he said. I just changed. I can't wait to try this. That fast? It doesn't take time to change once you understand the problem, he said. His face lit with excitement. Somebody hands you a rattlesnake. It doesn't take long to drop it, does it? I should hold on to this snake because it's me? No thanks. A lot of people would. He sat in the chair by the window and looked at me. I'm not a lot of people, he said. I've been lying here the last 2 days thinking that the loving souls Leslie and I used to be had slipped off into a different happy future together and left us in this miserable dimension where we can't even talk. I was so sure it was her fault, I couldn't see a way out, because to make things better, she had to change. But now, if it's my fault, I can change. If I change and stay changed for a month and we're still happy, then we can talk about changing her. He was up pacing again, looking at me as though I were a brilliant therapist. You know, just a few questions. Why did I need you to walk in from wherever you walked in from? Why didn't I ask these questions months ago? Why didn't you, I asked. I don't know. I got so buried in resenting her and all the problems. It's like she was causing them instead of trying to deal with them. And I was feeling sorry for myself, thinking how different she was from the woman I'd loved so much. He sat back on the bed, put his head in his hands for a moment. You know what? I was thinking you came in here. What's the last act of a desperate man? He walked to the balcony, looked out at the view, as if it were sunshine instead of rain. The answer is to change. If I can't change my own mind, I deserve to lose her. But now that I see, I know how to make her happy. And when she's happy, he stopped and looked at me, grinning. Well, you have no idea. Why should she believe you're transformed, I asked. It's not every day you walk out of the house uncaring and come back the loving guy she married. He thought about that, sad again for a moment. You're right, he said. There's no reason for her to believe it. It may take her days to know it, or months, or never. She may never want to see me again. He thought a moment more and turned to me. The truth is that my changing is up to me. Whether she notices, how she feels about it, that's up to her. Well, if she won't listen to you, how are you going to tell her what happened? I don't know, he said softly. I'll have to find a way. Maybe she'll hear it in my voice. He walked to the telephone, dialed the number. It was as if I had already disappeared. So intent was he on this call, so filled with the future he had nearly lost. Hi, sweetheart. I understand if you want to hang up, but I've learned something you might like to know. He listened. His mind became eyes on a wife 100 miles away. No, I called it to tell you you're right. I'm the problem. I've been wrong and selfish, and I've been unfair to you. And I can't begin to tell you how sorry I am. I'm the one who has to change, and I already have. He listened some more. Sweetie, I love you with all my heart, more than ever, now that I understand how much you've gone through to stay with me in this long, and I swear I'm going to make you glad you did. He listened again, smiled the smallest of smiles. Thank you. In that case, I wondered if you'd have time for one date with your husband before you never see him again. And that's the end of that chapter. Something to think about, it isn't, folks. How are we with the ones we love? I really, that book, by the way, is titled One by Richard Bach, and it's, I'm sure, available in all the bookstores if you're interested in reading it. There's a whole lot more in it. And as I said, when I read it the first time, it was awesome because as you go through the book and they keep meeting people, and then they aren't people with their same names, but they realize that it's an aspect of themselves. And for a couple days after I read that book, I was in that place where I would be talking to people, and suddenly I'd think, that's me. That's me I'm talking to. And it was a quite awesome experience. So you might enjoy reading the book. And think about it. If you're in a relationship, how do you treat one another? Waste time blaming the other one? Sometimes Chuck and I argue, and I'd stop and think. And I would say, you know what, honey? We were brought together, and we were brought together for a reason, and we are together. Let's just make it good. And sometimes you can stop an argument right in the middle by just looking at them and say, I love you. And it's the truth, isn't it? I'll be back with you Monday night. Thank you for being here. And God bless you, ladies and gentlemen. Have a lovely 4 days. We'll see you Monday. Bye-bye. God bless you.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, P.A. 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests, and not necessarily those of the First Amendment Radio Network or its affiliated radio stations.